Good morning.
Good morning. You're recording already?
It's set up automatically. So as soon as I log in, it sets it up. Yep.
Okay.
Hey, good morning, Chris.
Morning, Shocker.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. Welcome, everyone. We'll get started in just a couple of minutes. We have three topics today that we'll be covering. One is edge automation. Second is policy changes. And third is Pomba.
Hi, Chris.
Welcome, Steve.
Was the paper for the architecture description concluded?
We sent it off to LF, so they're doing their processing thing, and they'll get back to us with a draft, or rather with the finished version. So essentially, everything's in. There have been a couple of last minute comments, and I've been working with Lisa to see if we can accommodate, but we're really late in the process, so just trying to wrap it up at this point.
Okay, thanks.
Yep. Okay, we have critical mass, so let's get going. Ramke, are you on yet? Okay, so why don't we get started with Pam then. Pam, let me turn this over to you for policy.
Okay, thanks. Sharon here. Just as a little bit of background for the policy team, we have a current architecture that that we are supporting from Amsterdam through Beijing. But we have in mind some enhancements that we would like to do going forward, and we'd like to start making these changes in Casablanca. I don't believe we're going to have things finished here for Casablanca. I think we'll start making things available in Dublin. And what our goal is a couple main things that we wanted to talk about here in the architecture committee is we want to make it a little more easier to develop policies, but notably we wanted to go microservice oriented for the PDPs as our main way of scaling out the PDPs across, you know, global clouds, edge clouds, having ultimate flexibility in whoever deploys ONAP, that they can position the policy PDPs in whatever way they need, you know, in order to satisfy any type of performance issues that they have out there. This is the key thing here, Chris, that we wanted to come and talk to the architecture committee about, is this: what does it mean to be a microservice? And I don't think we've seen any definitive definition on that, you know, anywhere within the ONAP wiki, their proposals and things like that, but nothing that we can really grab onto. So,
we have something on that, yeah. Published by we have. Yeah, we have. I'll send you the slides, yeah.
If you're talking about the 30 plus page PowerPoint slide, we've gone through it, and honestly, you're going to have to drive down or something, give a little more structure to it, because there's suggestions in there, but I don't think there are decisions. And I think that's what we're looking for, okay?
Right. And Parvez, that's what we talked yesterday, was to really put some guidelines or best practices so that people who are building microservices, here are the do's and don'ts so that they can build microservices based on the consistent guidelines. I think that's what we need.
Yeah, I mean, I applaud you because it's very thorough, but I'm not sure as a developer I can.
We have a section on recommendation. We are still working on it. It should be ready in a few weeks, okay? I don't know, Chris, if you have a hard deadline, before the deadline it should be ready.
We should have it ready and reviewed by this team before we go to Beijing. So that says slot on next week's call.
Yeah.
I think you mean Casablanca.
Yeah, yeah.
The Beijing meeting in 2 weeks.
Oh, right. Sorry.
Yeah. We have those the slides, but we haven't really finalized that as a team input. Yeah, as a Tiger team input.
Mm-hmm. And also, would the scope of that recommendation be both? I mean, one for Casablanca and one for future. Or what are we thinking here?
We're going to have to. There's what's the long-term target, and then what do we do short-term?
With the same model, Chris, what we had for S3P, to say this is what we want to achieve. But here's the target that all applications for Casablanca are listed at least comply at this level. and then the long-term vision could continue over time.
Right. And really with anything we're doing in architecture, it's going to be the same thing. Where's the long-term vision that can be forward-looking for everybody, but what are the concrete steps to get there?
Yeah.
Just wanted to add, this is Arash from Amdocs. Aside from recommendations for microservices, it would be good to target creating some sort of a microservices SDK that designers could use to start a microservice that basically packages everything that ONAP recommends for a microservice to start with. That would be long term.
But what needs to be in there? I don't understand.
I think a good example would be, for example, if you're thinking about service mesh, some specific capabilities could come there, like the fundamental that, hey, this is going to be in every microservice.
That's a part of it. Ramki, that is a part of it. But Arash, maybe that we can take it offline. What do you mean by SDK?
I mean, let's take a Java project. The Maven artifacts, the libraries, the DMAP client, everything that a microservice needs to start, and the way that we want a microservice to be organized and structured so that all microservices in ONAP will be structured the same way. If you just give recommendations and leave it up to the designers, they will all be different at the end.
Let's wait for the recommendation and then we take it from there, which is SDK should be a part of it or not. I guess Ramki is right. Ramki, we have a section on the service mesh. It's already captured there, but we need to finalize that and make a decision.
Thanks.
Ham?
Yes?
Don't be so suspicious. one thing, I don't know whether you get into it here, but one thing I think will be also worth looking at is how the other projects should be using the policy. What's your recommendations about that, and how can we facilitate that from the architecture perspective as well?
Yeah, I'm not going to get into it into too detail because that's basically, well, it's kind of the third bullet here on policy lifecycle management, which is really some additions that we want to do to our API. Our API originated from a specific way of doing things. And as we brought in more functionality, it just became pretty apparent that it's not going to work in the long term. And some of the things that we've done with the API have hidden functionality that we want to expose. And so we need to kind of readdress our API. I won't be able to give you those details today. I hope that in July we can come back well before the M2 deadline and kind of talk about where we would like to go with the API to make sure that we're exposing all the policy functionality that is available through our PDPs.
Right. Yeah. Because I was, you know, looking at kind of what OOM did and how to sort of help with the other projects for the OOM perspective, and then maybe it's kind of good that we can think about this also from the policy perspective. OOF, and all of that. You know, they can all be have an easy path.
Sure. And in effect, that's what the second bullet is about with this model-driven support for policies. And so you can, one of the problems that we have right now in the way that the architecture is built is that when someone comes along with a model, there's significant amount of software development that has to be done in the platform to support the model. And that's not our long-term goal. Our long-term goal is, like, for example, for the OOF team in the HPA use case, it took 6 to 8 weeks to develop a very basic Tosca model. And that was almost 6,000 lines of code. That's really not a good forward-looking solution. And so what we really love to have is that if a team comes in, they have a model for a policy that can express it in Tosca or YAML or something very simple. They can add some other types of a script or a way of saying, this is what I want the dictionary to look like, this or what are the constraints are, and they simply feed that into the policy platform. And with minimal development, we should be able to support that going forward. That's our goal for that second bullet there, is to build that in there. As well as support, this last bullet here is more on how we execute the policies. We want to be able to support synchronous and asynchronous execution. When it comes to policies, the whole point of the policy platform is a unified place where anybody who is deployed in ONAP can go and see what are all the policies that are deployed and executing out in the system, and how can I do conflict? How can I detect conflicts when I create a policy? How do I mitigate it and prevent it? What we're going to do here with this architecture is lay a stronger foundation for it, because you can't, when you create policies, you can only go so far with it. As far as detecting conflicts. Really, once things are deployed and in the field, you need to have more stronger foundation out there. For example, in the APIs for the passive mode, test mode, safe mode, the ability to upgrade and roll back policies at will, as necessary if things start to go haywire out in the field. And so we're trying to build all that together so that we can get pretty close to a full-fledged solution here to ensure that the policy platform can mitigate any type of network problems or issues and ensure that the network continues to stand up and run for in production. Again, this is the current architecture, and there's nothing completely wrong with it. It's just a little busy screen here, but it just sort of shows how we evolved in sort of a Zacamal point of view here on the left. If you'll see, there's the policy, and this is not an access point, it's an administration point. Talks to a PDP, a Zacamal PDP. And one of the big problems I've highlighted here in this red square was we asked for them to add in a Drools engine. And as a quick way of doing that, they installed this gateway. So we route policies through a Zacamal into a Drools PDP. And when we start getting into this Kubernetes and scalability and resiliency, that's been problematic for us to work with. Now, we have a solution for Beijing. It's going to work, but long-term, we don't view it as sustainable. And so one other thing I've highlighted here is this use of the Maven repository up here. We actually would like to make that global for all of our types of PDPs that we have. We have a new PDP coming in from Ericsson called a Apex PDP, and we'd like to have all of them have current and same functionality where they pull policies from a Maven repo. It's going to make versioning easier. It's going to make upgrading and rollback and bug fixing and security fixing a lot easier if we have a consistent way of doing that. Along with, it should be allow for some ultimate flexibility of controlling what policies and what code get pulled out into ONAP production. If we can have the governance and the security permissions across these Maven repos, that we can ensure that people aren't injecting any type of attacks or things like that into the platform during production.
Hey Tom, this is Parviz.
Yeah.
This is good. I have a kind of a quick observation and recommendation. In this picture, all these lines that you on the arrows, these are internal interactions, and some of them are external, correct? Like portal and more, yeah? So
they're kind of a good way of showing that. I mean, I'm just kind of pointing out the current architecture, and this is what was put into Beijing. So
you may want to identify all the external interactions or interfaces, and then you can have, you're ready to basically define the so-called the bounded context for the policy sub-functions. If you want, we can take it offline. But the first step is to identify the internal interaction as opposed to external interactions, okay? That's the very first step.
Yeah, we're going to be doing that. Let me go kind of forward, and we'll talk about that. I've talked about this a little bit. I don't want to leave it out here, but we do have, these are kind of the limitations. I'm hearing a lot of background noise. Is there anything to mute? No,
Subways together.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's better.
There.
And now I can hear myself. Okay. And so again, we just want to kind of fix these little things that have kind of evolved just due to aggressive timelines and things like that, and favoring other things, other features and functionalities. And so I'm not going to go through all this right now. I'll let folks kind of read on that. Now, bear with me here on this picture here. We're still working in progress here, but ideally, this is kind of where we're going here when it comes to our target architecture. I'm trying to keep this less busy than the slide I was on before, but essentially we have up on the left-hand side, you will always have the through the portal, the policy GUI, where you can go out and have an interaction with our policy administration point, which is a back-end service, in which you can see what PDPs are out there, what policies are out there. You can create policies, you can deploy policies. Ideally, this is where you would go to do things like changing state for policy, like putting it in safe mode or test mode or rolling back and upgrading. There, that utilizes the what we're calling a policy lifecycle API. And you'll see below this policy GUI a couple different types of clients that are out there that are current. Anything you can do from the GUI, you should be able to be done from the command line by the lifecycle API. Other clients that create policies and deploy them are Clamp through closed loop. And we hope in Casablanca to have an integration with SDC service distribution so that we can automatically take policies for a service for placement as a first example and be able to create the actual runtime policy and push them and deploy them out to the PDP. Other types of API clients, these are clients that act as enforcement points. Again, you could utilize the CLI to do that. In fact, that's more, we're thinking more of the lines, this is how we integrate with Robot and Test Suite and things like that, but also DCAE. This is how DCAE comes in and gets its configuration type of policies, and same thing with OOF when it's doing its placement policies. So as example, and for this, we're thinking to help utilize Kubernetes as we learn more about Kubernetes and what it has to offer, as well as RESTful APIs and things like that. And so this is a work in
progress. Hey, Tim.
Yes, please. Yeah.
Just a quick question. I'm sorry, this is Alex. Hey, to get the placement policies and affinity, anti-affinity rules, all the goodness that will be in the VNF descriptor, you're saying that we would go through the SDC service distribution to get those in?
Well, yeah, that's my understanding of how SDC works. Once you have a service and you distribute it out there, that CSAR has all the required elements in it for that service, including the VNFs and their, I guess, what did you call them, VNF SDKs or VNF artifacts?
VNF descriptors.
Descriptors, right. And so, again, we would need to be the receptor of that, just like Clamp and ANAI and VID are and SO are at this point. The policy would also need to be that. We need to build that interface, and we would take those policies, create runtime policies off of those, and then subsequently deploy them out to the correct PDPs.
And again, Alex, what I think for that is when we onboard – what we have to do going forward is when we onboard the VNF descriptor, to be able to read that and populate the policies, policy templates and so on for that. So, and of course, after onboarding it and having that automatic population, there may be reasons to modify that as well. So I guess there's two stages there, right? But this is kind of like normal when you're onboard a VNF from that point of view.
Well, so that's exactly what I was trying to understand, Stephen, right? So there's a way of, it sounds like during onboarding, nothing is going to be distributed to policy because it's the action here takes place only when services have been created that actually make use of VNFs. So when we onboard a VNF, I don't think it's going to go anywhere. It's just going to be in the design catalog. And then only when the actual service is created, then it will be distributed.
For the distribution, you might be right, I think. I think there are sort of resource-level policies that you can extract from the VNFD. And then, of course, you're completely correct that the overall service policies must also be done from that point of view.
Yeah, and I just want to make sure we have the timing right, because policies can be overridden, at least some of them, right? We know that. So so just want to make sure we, as we embark on Casablanca changes, we get that done right. So,
yeah, I mean, Alex, there is this, it's very hard to depict these things where design time versus runtime. I mean, design time, definitely you want to start loading up your VNF descriptors into SDC and into the catalog so they're available. But on the also on the other hand, as an ONAP, I guess a tech ops person, they probably want to go into the policy GUI and using some sort of models, maybe the same models, set up default policies and default policies for all services for all VNFs of this type and have those up and available. And then when a service comes along and gets distributed, it's the policy framework's job to resolve what is the actual ultimate policy that's to be enforced out in runtime. That functionality will still be there.
Yeah, most of the just to be sure we're on the same page, guys, pretty much what's in the VNFD is immutable. There may be some little things we could change, but for the most part, the service, the VNFs themselves, once the VNFD is created, I think the expectation from the vendor side is that no one's going to change anything from the VNFD per se, right? But there may be additional policies that we may want to create that will further guide placement or optimization of one. So we'll have to figure out the gory details in a little bit, I guess.
Yeah. So Alex, I think for the most part, I think most of us agree with you on that, but I can tell you that I get internal requirements that I'm going to override the VNFD anyway. I don't care what the vendor says. So, I think we just.
Hey, the way I look at it, you know, if the vendors are okay with that, then more power to you.
Exactly. If folks want to do that, that is their call. They're now responsible for that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
There may be support questions that come up in such cases, but
exactly.
Well, Steve, you know, this is where I guess you guys and others from other companies that build VNFs need to kind of set expectations. From my perspective, when we build the VNF descriptor in the VNF SDK, and then when it gets onboarded, you know, we don't know what the arrangement is between the vendor and the operator. So it's up to you guys to enforce the warranty conditions.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's not a technical question. And you can build a gun. You can also shoot yourself in the foot, or you decide not to, right? Another question, you mentioned, Palm, that you were using the APIs to get the policies. Is it to get the policies or to get the decisions?
Well, it's right now, I guess that depends on the governance, because as I understand, we want to start having a role-based access here in order to get the policies. I mean, obviously, if you're in Clamp, you want to be able to get, hey, what is the current policy here and how do I change it and update it and things like that, okay?
I have a question on that, but for this question, I was referring to the API clients down the bottom, the PEPs.
Okay. Now, yeah, this one is more in the form of, you know, I'm DCAE, here's my closed loop, I'm enforcing, I'm a collector, a VES collector, or a TCA, what is my policy, I'm located in this, so what is my configuration policy? So this is acting...
Okay, so they're actually getting the policy, not the decisions. Yeah. Okay.
What? No, they're getting the policy decision, that is what they're getting.
Okay.
So for the CRUD part, the CRUDD, that's where you're actually getting the actual guts to the policy. What does this policy look like? So it is a little different. We're trying to educate folks
on that.
Hold on.
Sorry. Yeah, Pam, I have two questions. This Parviz. The first question is, you have, as Steve says, you have this agent for policy enforcement, like DCAE, CLI, and OOF. Now, you have this PopSob, the DMAP in the middle. Isn't that those components should interact through DMAP as a in a PopSob manner to really access the policy rules?
We're implementing it as a RESTful API, not as DMAP right now. And I guess that is going to be a question for the architecture committee, because honestly, it's inconsistent across the board. SO has a RESTful API, the DMAP API. What should be the standard? What should be the standard of use for DMAP versus that? We're using DMAP in order for our PAP to communicate with our PDPs. We're definitely doing
that. But then my next question is, we have the recommendation as for Beijing that all the ONAP components, they should register with the MSP. Is that MSP interaction is captured here, or no, that is not done yet?
Well, MSB is not captured here. All MSB is what is my API? That's all it is.
API.
I mean, that's part of the Kubernetes type of stuff. So it's not really saying I am a RESTful API. And I don't really know if folks, I really don't know on how useful that is when you have that already in Kubernetes.
Now, those are missing steps that if you want to migrate this into a microservices-based architecture, we need to talk about that. Maybe we should have a call, okay?
Well, it's just deploying another component that says, here are your APIs, and using Kubernetes for that. I mean, if there's, they can certainly go through MSB to get it versus Kubernetes. That's policy team doesn't need to really worry about that. That's the clients and how they want to do that. So,
yeah, that's tied together between OOM and MSB. So when OOM brings up the component, it registers with MSB. So then it's just a way of querying.
Yeah, I mean, policy team will certainly help support that, but it's not crucial to the actual implementation here. I mean, they want if people want to bring an ONAP in and they want to use MSB, they can do so. Nothing here thwarts any of that. If they don't, they certainly don't have to do it like that. So,
Pam, Steve,
if I may. Yeah, sorry, Pam. Hi, Sishu here. So one thing, Pam, the other thing which we have to consider is the policy recipes right inside SO. So when we're talking about this, all things like, I mean, especially the scale out features or something which relates to policy related recipes inside SO, the onboarding of that should be also dynamic, because we are talking about the SDC being able to distribute the complete set of artifacts for policy. I think that distribution also should include SO side of facts.
I think you just said that SO distributes policies to the policy platform. I disagree with that.
No. I said the other way. I said SO should have the policy recipe, which should be invoked by policies when it comes to certain scale up and all. For example, scale up, so sort of policies to be invoked, then the SO recipe should be invoked by policy.
Okay. I think that's a part of a control loop. Is that correct? So you're...
Yes. It's a part of control loop.
Right. Okay.
But the problem is, because we are talking of this distribution coming from SDC side, and SO doesn't have the distribution right now. I'm just trying to connect those two dots, right? When we are talking of this automation of distribution coming from SDC to policy, we should also consider how that distribution will also take care of the policy recipes inside SO. Okay. Or else we'll have something dangling. That is the point which we have to consider.
There's a couple things there, Sashu. First of all, how does Clamp is where we define these control loops, where we're saying, I want to scale out and I want to use this recipe in SO.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And yeah. That nothing in my picture that I'm showing here is saying, no, that's not going to happen. This is a very high level picture. I think we need to work on that interaction.
Right.
It goes under the umbrella that we need a common actor API and a common actor inventory or some sort of inventory, so that when people go into and they're designing a service, they're using Clamp to design a control loop, they know that, okay, if this event happens, I can go to SO and I can scale out and I want you to use recipe number ABC or letter ABC, things like that.
Yes.
I think we need to drive these things through the control loop subcommittee. So I ask that you help out and you start attending or have somebody attend those control loop subcommittee meetings so we can build up, figure out the right way to get all that built into it, because this has to go across SDC and CLAMP and policy and SO,
yes.
et cetera. So we can figure out a very consistent way for us
to I'm fine with that. I'm just wanted to make sure that we don't miss that topic, you know, that should not be overlooked. Otherwise, we are good.
Okay. Pam, this is Ramki, a quick question. So we talked about a little bit about the extensibility of the whole overall framework. I just wanted to make sure, for example, there are cloud-specific policies, right, which should be introduced anytime, like, you know, and that can evolve over time. So do we have a sort of a procedure on how to go about it, that extensibility through, I mean, expressed in terms of GUI, then also in the database, how the schema, do we have some description on it, or are we working on it?
Well, I think you're just talking about, you want to build a policy around cloud, right?
No, so basically I want to expose cloud-specific capability. This is just around, for example, Alexa's favorite topic on HPA, so which is about exposing certain hardware-specific capabilities. Instead, now we're talking about cloud-specific software capabilities. An example would be maybe Min Guarantee. I mean, there are several such examples, QoS examples. You know, we can go about that. But what I'm looking for is how extensible this framework is, because that capability list can evolve over time. It's not going to be just, you know, one capability today. Later, okay, I'll have one more and one more, which, you know, the operators can capitalize and offer differentiated services.
Okay.
So,
are you done?
So that's sort of where I want to know how, I mean, basically, if we can talk a little bit about the extensibility of the framework itself, I mean, is basically what are the touch points, right? If we want to, you know, extend it to add new capabilities, where all and, you know, how you go about that and also how easy it is.
Okay. So what I'm trying to show here are the executable components here. And so what you're referring to is a type of policy. And what I'm trying to build is a framework here that has minimal development going forward, into that if anybody comes along and says, here's a model for a cloud type of architecture, you know, you could create models, whatever you need for HPA, whatever you need for policy or for optimization or placement, you can create your models, you can evolve your models over time with minimal work on the platform in order to support that. That's my goal with this architecture here, with this policy platform. Okay. I think we're on the same page. I'm trying to do that. So I'm trying to avoid the case where, you know, Ramki, you have a new way of defining policies and for however you want to deploy your cloud service mesh or whatever, sorry for not giving any specific example. And you just go ahead and you go offline and you're able to put that together through Tosca or whatever modeling language you want. And all you have to do is load it in the platform, and maybe there's some minimal development for serialization of messages and API implementation, but it's agnostic to these pieces that you're seeing right here. I don't have to change code in the policy administration point. I don't have to change code in the PDPs. They just work. That's our goal here, okay, for the policy team. So I hope that makes sense. And I don't really have a slide for that. I think you're getting more into the implementation of policy.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. So that it'll be great if we can have a slide on the extensibility of the framework. Say maybe we can take an example and say, hey, if I'm basically have a new Tosca model, how I go about it? I mean, how many steps it is, right? Sort of.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I'm looking at more of a development perspective.
Sure.
What changes need to happen?
Yeah,
how simple it is.
I don't have that now. What my biggest goal right now is I need to go from this, I fix this, to this, so that I can build in this what we're calling it, kind of a policy engineer type of a framework, so that this can support that type of framework where you have the ultimate flexibility to build and define express your policies however you need to express them, whether it's one Tosca or it's a couple different ways of saying this is how I just want to come in with a specification and here I am with a policy, and we're able to take that, translate it into executable policies. And again, extensibility for that should also be, do I want to use the Apex engine, or do I want to be the Zaxamal engine, or do I need to this Drools, or do I need a combination of things like Drools Zaxamal or Apex and Zaxamal and things like that, or all three? We want to have the ultimate, as far as software extensibility, to be available to folks when they bring it into or bring ONAP into their production environments.
And Pam, this is Raghu. Is it fair to understand this diagram as the PDPs can be deployed internal to ONAP in some components, or it could be external to ONAP on some network platform or cloud platform or wherever the policy needs to be?
Yeah, I didn't want to make it too messy. I mean, somewhere, if we can get a high level agreement on this is where we want to go, we can start drilling down to these type of scenarios where, how do I deploy the PDPs? Do it, like, for example, for DCAE, if we have some sort of performance requirement, maybe we deploy, you know, the Drools BDP right next to it in the same VM or the same memory scope, as you know, if that's where we need this microservice definition a little more clearer to us, so that people have the ultimate flexibility on where and how they deploy all the PDPs. I hope that answers your question.
Yes, but I was just trying to make sure that this PDP thingy is not just for internal ONAP behavior.
If you want to build your own PDP?
Yes, but also deploying it, I'm trying to understand the description of this PDP as both that, for example, events from hardware could be fed into a local PDP as opposed to shipping it back all the way to something hosted as part of an ONAP service, for example, right? Or is it always PDP always considered an internal ONAP service?
Well, if it's outside, Raghu, then it's not part of ONAP, in the sense that we might have some events or some what we call exceptions that need some attention, and we might not have policy. The policy is to say send it outside OSS system to handle it. That's
okay.
That's exactly fine. So that's a PDP outside ONAP, but that's not part of ONAP. That's outside ONAP. The policy only says that look for the signature. When you find it, send me an event. I'll take care of it. If we have policy, then it's part of ONAP to say, I know what to do when I see that event.
I think obviously ONAP, we're going to have our standard components here. We're going to have AppC, we're going to have SO, you know, and these PDPs here. But nothing should be restrictive about what we ship in ONAP, so that when you bring ONAP in internally, if you have other types of your own PDPs or your own DCAE collectors or your own type of a controller, like maybe you have a help desk ticketing, you know, controller that you want to be part of the control loop. Everything, when you bring ONAP in, it should work all together. You should be able to configure it, build any type of policy templates, add your own types of actors and recipes and things like that. And everything should just work together. I mean, I think that should be our overall goal with ONAP, is that we have these basic components, but when you bring it in, things are configurable and you can extend it. That's my goal here with the policy. So I think we're going to hit that.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Pam?
Yes.
You mentioned sort of who can get access to what policies and so on there. And I know there's a little bit of, sort of discussions also with IAF in that, because we kind of need this, a consistent way of doing this across the system, but I haven't really seen that described up yet, actually. Do you have an interface to IAF for that type of thing, or do you view it slightly differently?
Yeah, there's really no governance right now on it. It's, you know, we're all doing basic off the auth, and we've canned in that type of stuff. I think for, we do internally have AAF also for our PAP, and so there is some work done. And we have a user story for that in Casablanca to bring that interaction out and available so that you can say who has the ability to do that. I was getting more into the fact that what we'd like to do is use Nexus Maven repos in order to, because obviously for Drools and also going forward with Zacamal and possibly more with Apex, there's executable code there. And so we want to be careful that when we write templates and we write these policies and whatever gets put in the Maven Nexus is going to be solid code, and that we don't allow that, you know, it to go off to some other Maven repo somewhere and pull down something that's got a security issue in it or some sort of virus or things like that. So we want to make sure that that we kind of close that up, and so that we can do some things. Like, for example, I'd like to be able to test a set of policies right along with production. And if you use the governance or the security for Maven and Nexus and your settings files and ensure that, you know, the only the right PDPs pull from the correct places, you can sort of do some prototyping, you know, in that mirrors production time. Without restricting your developers. So you can have some way of doing that, but also protect the production environment and make sure that it's not going to go off and pull things from some Maven Nexus that's got some jars in it that do things like, you know, that have a DOS attack or something like that.
Yeah, okay. So because what I was getting to there, maybe it's along the same lines, is, for example, if I've authored some policies and I kind of work inside of Packet Core and then someone else works in IMS, they don't mess with my policies. That would be kind of unfortunate.
Yeah. Again, when we start having multiple people creating policies across different services, I mean, I certainly hope we don't get to the point where we have thousands of policies. I think we can keep it minimized so there's 100 or less or hundreds at some point, hopefully not too many. A lot of them could be reusable, that we can do things like conflict detection and make sure that when somebody is deploying policies, they have the right to do so. And if you have emergency situations, like you've got something going on in the network and you need to shut down policies, that the right person with the right governance or security permission are able to go in and say, I want you to run in safe mode now, or I want to turn off all these policies inactive and things like that. So,
Cool.
I hope that I'm pretty sure that we're taking a step towards being able to support all that functionality in there. I'm not so sure we have it quite now. So,
okay, cool.
I don't know. I don't have a ton more. Chris, I wish I could have talked more about the API here, but we do have a wiki page. It's still a work in progress on where we're going with the policy architecture. And thanks to Liam Fallon, who's done a ton of work on this. We don't think we're going to have a finished product here at the end of Casablanca, but we should have a pretty close to finish, and that we should start being able to roll this into Dublin and then start deprecating the old architecture sometime after that when it's appropriate. So that's where that at. This is where the details are at. We hope we're on the right track. I think we need to work, Chris, more with you and Parviz with on how the microservices and how we define those as microservices. And then we'll come back at some point and talk about the new API.
Sure. Why don't we do a follow-up? I'll work with you offline on that, and we can move that forward. Thanks for the presentation. I think this was very useful.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, everybody, for your questions. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Got pairing here.
And I'd like to turn it over next to Ramke and Raghu for Edge Automation.
Yes, thank you, Chris.
I'm taking my places at 9, but I'm going to go there.
Are you able to see my screen?
Yes, we see you.
Okay. Excellent. So let me go to slideshow. This is more of an architecture update, follow-up from the good discussions we had at Vancouver. We are still not there at all the APIs we need for Casablanca, but we wanted to keep the team posted on what we are working on, especially the MVP for Casablanca, which has been finalized the last call. And we're looking forward to more discussions, especially for Casablanca. So just a quick overview and recap on the problem statement. Essentially, the first one is a broad set of context information. I mean, all this information, by the way, is in our wiki. We are just summarizing that here. Right? Context information, and what does it mean? I mean, from ONAP, southbound and northbound interface, context APIs, examples could be Edge Infra or App Analytics or MEC APIs around radio network information, right? And second is scale edge automation cloud service, or Srini always likes to call this edge automation offload, right? It's essentially infrastructure lifecycle management with offered as a service model, right? It could be analytics or closed loop resiliency, right? Where there is no ONAP components involvement, this is all offered by the cloud as a service. So last is the at scale edge VNFs and third party apps automation, where essentially ONAP also plays a role with an ONAP edge interacting with the ONAP central, right, in a hierarchical fashion. So scope and progress, where we are with the application profile definition for Casablanca and beyond, we are done. Infrastructure profile definition, same for Casablanca and beyond, we are done. This defines the basic IaaS PaaS attributes needed from cloud providers, you know, with that profile definition. And regarding the hierarchical ONAP central edge reference architecture, you know, that's where we are, Casablanca and beyond. We support the edge application infrastructure profile. We support any cloud internal business unit or external partner at any location, edge, regional, or central. And we have also identified the MVP components in ONAP Edge for Casablanca. We'll talk about it shortly. And this is done, right, from a reference architecture perspective. What we really need are jumping on right now is the functional interactions or the API reference points for Casablanca, right? We are looking forward to work closely with several project teams and also the architecture committee, you know, to achieve that goal in the next couple of weeks. And of course, we expect this to be a multi-release project. This is just the beginning. And essentially, let me project the wiki link as we speak. So the hierarchical ONAP architecture, right? Central edge architecture. So Raghu, you want to go ahead, describe the key changes we did from the last Vancouver summit? Go ahead.
Hey, can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. Given some of the feedback from a few folks on various calls, we have sort of updated this, but fundamentally, I want you guys to take away 3 points. The distinction between the blue provider and the green providers. The green providers are the sort of the cloud providers, if you will. And the green providers have a domain of gazillion, bazillion cloud nodes, okay? And so that's the first key takeaway. The second key takeaway is the blue provider is using ONAP Central to orchestrate both asking for an infrastructure as a service from a green provider and onboarding of required network functions. And then the first part would be as shown in the sequence within the blue, where the service orchestrator works with the multi-cloud to either ask via the 2A path, the purple path for an internal, or the green path for any external partners, for example. Okay, that's the second key takeaway. And the third key takeaway that you guys need to sort of take away from this is that in addition to, as Ramki said, in addition to the green provider providing complete, you know, all support of various access as service, the blue provider might want to host some edge components for a slice of that edge domain in order to manage their own set of functions, etc., or maybe even simply just do some analytics on their own. And so there is a hierarchy of ONAP Central and ONAP Edge in that particular scenario. So those are the key takeaways that you want to take from this.
Just a question here.
Sure.
So on the interface between, just as an example, the blue at the top and the left green, what's the type of capabilities you're requesting across there? Is that similar to what you might see across, say, OpenStack, or is that also configuring the VNFs and applications themselves?
Excellent. Yeah, that is the on the far on the right hand side, within those green arrows, the first one I point out is that there is a API from that multi-cloud adapter to the purple side or the green side, and it'll be sort of a prescriptive intent request asking for an infrastructure as a service that could include, I want a certain set of compute, just like an OpenStack set of commands, or it, in addition, it could also say, here are the set of VNFs that I want you to host on that platform at this location, et cetera, et cetera. So it could be a fairly extensive detailed set of attributes, if you will.
Hey, Raghu.
One thing to keep in mind, real quick, just to add to that point, one thing to keep in mind is we are starting small. So that means, you know, all we're saying is the current functionality would be whatever we're thinking, right, but supporting without any ONAP edge will continue to be supported in this model. That's something to keep in mind, right? As simple as that. I mean, basically, so, that's the starting point.
Hey, Ramki, this is Alex. So the API call from the blue to the green. the green is meant to be an ONAP instance, or is it something else?
No, the green is essentially a cloud provider, right? It's just a cloud provider, so clearly indicated.
Yeah, there are two levels of details, Alex. The first level of detail is that the blue is talking to the green. And the second level of detail is if the blue wants to instantiate a set of ONAP edge components, then the blue is talking to the blue edge, sort of think of it as an overlay interlinking the two. And that is a set of detail that we are still working on, as to what kind of an interaction would happen.
Okay, so you're not, okay, so there would be a peer-to-peer call between the central instance of ONAP and the edge instance of ONAP, and whatever resource providers existed on the edge would get invoked accordingly, right?
Correct. And that is a long-term view. That is a long-term vision. In the short term, we are kind of decoupling it for now, but in the long term, we want to allow that. Yes.
Correct.
Let me make sure. So the blue to blue, the central to the edge blue, that doesn't go through the green, right? That's a direct ONAP to ONAP API call, irrespective
correct.
Of whether it's
correct. Okay. Yeah.
Actually,
yeah.
I would imagine it would be part of.
Sorry, guys. One at a time. We're not able to hear.
Okay, that's
sorry.
experts.
Okay, so I would imagine that the blue to blue would be done through some sort of a MethLSO API, right?
No,
we haven't figured that out yet, because I think this is a bigger question that we've been tackling within the architecture committee. When you go to a federated partner, you know, if it's AT&T talking to Orange, then you're going to want to use something like MethLSO API. But if you're going deep within one provider, you probably want something even more robust.
It doesn't go through multi-cloud, right? I mean,
point Gil is asking, and I think the same question somebody was asking, I forgot, I think Stefan or somebody was asking, that once, whether it's the network element VNF has been deployed, or Edge ONAP has been deployed, communication to configure that VNF doesn't go through multi-cloud, and communication between the Edge ONAP component and the central ONAP component doesn't go through the multi-cloud, but those are direct communications, right, in whatever mechanism they
So one thing I'd like to add there is it's qualified in the sense what functionality you're offloading. So that's, we'll go through some of the examples. If it be that all we're doing in the ONAP Edge is, for example, have some independent DCA microservices, for example, SON optimization, then the communication pattern is exactly as today, like basically the design, deploy, operate, everything is happening today. It depends on what you are trying to do with the edge. Right? I mean, but Vimal, to your point, if we are actually trying to offload the deployment part also to the edge with an ANDA, local ANDA, then exactly, then everything will go through the ONAP edge in that context. Hey, it's very contextual.
Ramke, this is Parviz. I guess we talked about this in Vancouver when Raghu presented this. The green on the right and the middle, that is the normal interaction between two providers. We already talked about that as part of external API project. And yep. Alex mentioned the MethLSO, or Chris, you said that is under discussion. Yes, that is not really specific to the edge automation. That's between the two carriers, yeah? And the green carrier doesn't have to be an ONAP provider. So let's separate that from the green on the left. The green on the left, I guess Gil's question that should be really a part of the blue provider or should be a partner. If it's a part of the blue provider, then you don't have to really worry about it.
So this would be like an Azure that's purchased by the service provider.
Correct.
You know, so this would be part of the service that the first service provider is purchasing. So multi-cloud then would be the appropriate way to instantiate that.
But I think, Chris, there is a distinction between, so Azure is on the right-hand side, those with purple thing, like partner like Verizon or either. But if you are, let's say, I give an example, AT&T. AT&T has Edge Cloud, and they call it AIC Edge, or what they called Acrono Edge. In that case, the multi-cloud will talk to the green, which is on the left, without going through the API gateway. I think that's the distinction between whether we go through the gateway.
But
go ahead, Alex.
The northbound interface of the green, what is it that we're doing there? It seems like we would want to invoke a catalog entry or somehow affect. What's that northbound interface look like? Is it the same interface that we would use to instantiate a network service or a VNF in the blue?
So go ahead, Raghu.
Two things. This diagram is assuming a certain sort of separation between a green domain versus the blue operator, even though it might be internal. Okay, that's point number one. So what you see is a horizontal line across that purple arrow, just like the horizontal dotted line across the green arrows, to show that there is a demarcation of responsibility. That one, right? And so even if it is an internal business unit, there is a demarcation of responsibility, point number one. Point number two, given that kind of demarcation, Alex's question is an important one, which is, what is the information exchange across the purple versus the green? Should it be the same? Should the purple be more detailed than the green? Can it be, you know, that's all, you know, if it is internal, the provider like AT&T could decide, hey, expose me the gory details so I can touch all the knobs and tweaks. But this is something that we need to discuss. What I would love to start with is a common definition, doesn't matter whether it's purple or green at an abstracted level, asking for a service. And asking for a service across that each of those green domains, depending on what the service is.
The point there is to abstract what the service is, I think, because in two examples, if I see the purple to the left and the green to the right, in principle, you're asking for infrastructure-based service there, right?
Right.
And then, because if I go to the other extreme where I'm asking for a service that involves something a bit more, then maybe you don't do the purple, you go directly blue to blue because, and the blue would go to the green. So there's different scenarios here and it's good to be kind of clear on that. And I think there's one more as well, but I don't think it's time to bring this in, is if the bottom, let's say, orchestration there was also kind of... related to Etienne Effi.
I think, let's not bring that one in yet.
How would that be different, Stephen? Etienne Effi,
Sorry, there's one more. There's one more box that's missing, which would be another blue at the same level of the greens, maybe off to the left, which would be like in a Crano or another instance of ONAP. And that's what Steve was bringing up. And that would be a connection from SO to the SO of the new entity.
So just to clarify, Chris, on the left green where we say internal, where we use the term orchestration, SDN fabric, et cetera, that whole thing, you can either visualize it as an ONAP instance or a non-ONAP instance. We are allowing the Crano or whoever is the edge provider to do whatever they want. We are treating that as a black box.
But then I don't think we go through multi-cloud. You know, then I think there's a direct connection from SO if it has its own orchestration engine. Multi-cloud is if we're treating it like a Vim.
Right. This depends on the service abstraction.
The fundamental question is if there's orchestration. So this green box on the left, the internal, shows orchestration. And if that's an internal provider, that means the internal provider owns that orchestration. Right, there's something down there in the green that's providing the orchestration. I think what you're saying, Raghu, is that that could be an ONAP instance that's providing that orchestration and providing the fabric control.
But that responsibility for the green is for the cloud, the edge cloud. So a Crano on the left green could be a Crano, but still the responsibility of what orchestration is done by green versus what is done on the top blue are slightly.
My point is that if.
Go ahead.
I guess there needs to be a similar pattern there, right? Because what you're really talking about is not just a dumb Vim, right, that knows how to vend VMs and containers and whatnot, right? We're talking about something that has orchestration intelligence. And so the interaction with that entity is gonna be a little bit different than what you would typically expect to do with a resource provider like a Vim.
Exactly, and that's why we had the orchestration on green as well as in blue, and that was the point, Alex, exactly the point I was making. The green is a edge cloud, even if it's, let's say, AT&T edge cloud, it could have workload coming from ONAP, could be coming workload coming from internal OSS, or workload coming from some other third-party applications. But it has the same pattern, like it has orchestration, it has the SDN fabric controller, it has the analytic, and it has policy and inventory. Yeah.
And to answer Chris's question about shouldn't there be an SO to SO connection, and the intent is, at least in the initial diagram that we have, we are assuming that all external cloud related connections would go through multi-cloud because it does the quote unquote adaptation between internal data model and external cloud data models. And so that's why I showed the blue double arrow always going to multi-cloud and then multi-cloud doing the internal versus external.
Which makes sense if it's an infrastructure service. If it's
exactly
more than
correct.
Yes, but there's a notion of all these I think it's important to maintain the separation using some sort of a catalog API, don't you think, Raghu?
Correct. Yes. So one thing, Alex, that was essentially we wanted to, I mean, I think this is more of depicting a starting small approach, saying that, hey, assuming infrastructure as service, and then some MVP in the edge. But I can see certainly, I think we need to find a way to capture like the more generalized picture. So basically there are different ONAP edge deployment models. One is you're offloading some of the deployment components like orchestration. Other is you are not, well, right?
The way... So,
just okay. To let me complete my... So I think we need to find a way to depict all those models concisely in one picture and then just say, hey, if it's sort of, you know, say... Hey, if it's a deployment workflow and this is how it will be, but if it's more of sort of IaaS current workflow, which we are depicting now, this is how it will be. We'll probably find a way, you know.
Okay,
but we have to explain all the choices. It is not that we can come back and say this is the only way to do it. Like, say, there is always going to be a deployment workflow.
Hold on a sec, Alex. Parviz is trying to say something, so Parviz first, then back to you.
Okay. Thank you. So, Ramki, you have three separate scenarios. It's a one for blue, and 2A and 2B. For one, I agree with Chris that if you're going to really use the ONAP SO, going to the multi-cloud, then everything in the left green would be infrastructure, like a VIN.
Yep.
So having an orchestrator there doesn't make much sense. So that's a clarification for the case blue, which is A, which is one. If you agree to that one, you should really update the figure. Then you have two A.
Parviz, the point is, I mean, we cannot... So. Also, what you have to keep in mind is different ONAP edge persona, right? One ONAP edge persona is IaaS. I mean, keeping it simple, right? That is one persona, right? What this is being depicted. The other persona could be the orchestration.
But you still have one persona
on the edge, right? Correct.
Can we close this, Alex?
Go ahead. Yeah, I mean, so my thinking is that if you're orchestrating, all right. So from a Vim to me, the function of a Vim or how we interact with a Vim is very different than how we interact with another entity capable of intelligent orchestration. And to me, if it's really a true cloud to cloud communication, then it really needs to be done through the usual means, which is, you know, based on a catalog entry somewhere. You're going to ask that cloud to instantiate a service, and or VNF, whatever that quote-unquote service is, and it's going to go and do it, or it's either going to succeed or fail. But don't treat it like a Vim that's simply going to deliver a YaaS service. I think that would be a mistake, guys.
But just to close on this, what we need to keep in mind is there are several deployment possibilities where definitely IaaS could be one, and you know, Alex's to others' point, definitely where we are offloading the orchestration of the deployment functionality to the edge. We will find a way to depict all those in a simple way. We just need to, I think, make some minor tweaks and show different workflow paths, right?
I think it's okay if we don't do everything in the Casablanca release if we say that we've identified here are the four or five scenarios that we'll have to support initially, and we're going to support one or two in Casablanca and then build from that. That's perfectly reasonable. Just make sure that you've identified kind of the universe that we're working in so that we're not shutting down possibilities that we'll need down the road.
Exactly, the target reference architecture versus the Casablanca reference architecture, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think this, to me, the fundamental questions we have to answer here is the green. So this green picture on the left, the internal cloud, seems to assume that there is orchestration and inventory in that cloud. So like as Alex said, this isn't just a dumb Vim. This is something that's actually managing the cloud, managing the fabric, you know, presumably collecting events on the fabric nodes, rerouting, you know, around fabric failures. And there's a whole set of functionality down in that green that's implied by that box that has orchestration in it on the left. And so to me, the first question is, do we think that's the scope of ONAP? And if it is, then the question would be, should that purple line exist to multi-cloud? Or should we maintain a separation of concerns between that green orchestration stuff and that blue orchestration stuff so that at some level of abstraction, ONAP itself sees the internal cloud to be a peer of a external cloud so that you could do things like, you know, move workloads from internal to external clouds during failures and stuff like that.
So,
we have been saying that we should maintain separation of concern to keep ONAP cloud agnostic, even if it's internal cloud, always go through a multi-vim layer, because what is on the green could be have workload coming from known ONAP requester like OSS systems or other applications. Number one. Number two,
But the granularity of the... the granularity of the interaction between the multi-vim layer and something else is completely different. It's a separate model. I mean, like, why would you want to treat the green box as a quote-unquote resource provider? It's not. It's much more sophisticated.
I can have more detailed information from the green visible to the blue, but at least I have a separation because I don't know where I'm going to deploy this VNF. Otherwise, the SO has to know this VNF is on my internal cloud, which I know a lot more and let me do differently. Or this one goes on external cloud, I have to do different things. So I want
Look at it this way. The multi-vim API essentially assumes that the vim is under the control of the ONAP instance. Okay? So it's a very different relation. It's a subordinate relationship. The edge cloud and the core cloud are not subordinate and a superior relationship. It's a peer-to-peer.
So I think in this model, we are talking really a central orchestrator versus a regional orchestrator model, right? I think, Alex, that's what you're trying to get at, correct? So basically, some of the deployments, so basically you find a regional orchestrator to go ahead with the deployment. You're not talking IaaS layer. You're doing a handoff at an orchestration layer, correct?
If you're doing that, then it doesn't go through multi-cloud, in my understanding.
Correct, exactly. Right. That is the part I think this picture is depicting the IaaS model, right? Because that's sort of, I mean, we wanted to start there for Casablanca, correct? I mean, clearly start small, right? Because really what we had in mind was we will deploy only some of the operational components. I mean, even right. Not even close. We'll go through the MVP, hey, but we start small, yeah.
Ramki, I have this suggestion. For blue, which is case one, you recolor the red-green box to blue and remove the orchestration from there. That takes care of one, which is only an infrastructure interaction through multi-cloud with the ONAP provider. That is case one.
Pause. So you're saying Azure doesn't have orchestration? I mean, doesn't Azure have orchestration internally? Is that what you're saying?
Parvi, it doesn't, because infrastructure is just a CPU, storage, and memory. Yeah.
Doesn't Azure decide which compute host? Don't they have their own placement where they decide which compute host to put a workload on?
That is not visible even to ONAP.
Of course not. That's what that dash line says. The demarcation
for the blue
says everything
for
below.
For the blue, you redraw or maybe recolor the green box as blue, and then you don't have to use the purple interaction. you can just use an internal like ONAP interaction through the multi-cloud. So that takes care of the blue. For the 2A and 2B, if that is a partner provider for the edge resources, then there are two cases. That partner is owned and operated by ONAP provider, or is it just a partner, like the green? Which one? For 2A, is that a partner like green, or is it different?
So 2A is internal, right? Parvish, I mean, clearly what we're saying is if it's an internal, so though, I mean, there is a demarcation responsibility, but if it's an internal cloud business unit, we just need to go through multi-cloud. We are not doing anything external, right? Correct. It's simple.
Then that was one through multi-cloud. For 2A and 2B, if they are internal, then you don't go through multi-cloud.
Why not?
Because you are putting the orchestrator in the green box, and multi-cloud is below the orchestration level. If you look at the ONAP stack...
With the green, in my view, is a simple green with no purple thing like the left, or green happens to be with the purple thing that to say I talk through a gateway, it provides the same functionality. So whether I get resources from my 18 instances of Azure, or 18 instances of Acrono, or I get the resource from Azure, they have to do the same thing. I make the same request. I want a VM. I want with 4 CPUs, so much memory, and so much storage. Somebody has to orchestrate all those activities.
But you don't. And
it's the same request, whether it goes through Azure or goes to an AT&T internal Acrono.
But you don't have to...
Hey, Vimal,
okay, the orchestration interaction...
The problem is this.
It's above the multi-layer, on the multi-cloud layer. That orchestration interaction is above the multi-cloud layer. It's not, that's an infrastructure interaction. Not a orchestration, whether it's internal or external, that has to happen above the multi-cloud layer. The multi-cloud mediation layer is below the orchestration interaction.
It is coming through SO to multi-cloud, and multi-cloud make a request. The request has to be satisfied by orchestrating those steps to say, I got the resources you requested, and here is the VM.
Go ahead, Alan. Vimal, are you saying that the only thing you're going to ask the edge cloud to provide to you is a resource?
Well, it is providing me some. It lies a workload. It will do the fabric, the overlay fabric control, and I'll.
That's right.
It will tell the police to say do this analytic, and when this thing VM goes down or this VM goes down.
Okay, but semantically, that's a very different thing than a typical interaction with the VM, where I say give me a VM or a bunch of VMs and make connections to them, right?
So let me ask
you're basically saying, look, I'm gonna choreograph the orchestration of an end-to-end service. I'm gonna delegate a portion of that service creation to an edge cloud. It seems like that would be more appropriately done through a catalog.
But Alex, even if we take that approach, I mean, let's talk about a case where there is a central orchestrator and then there are regional orchestrators, right? You need to choose a regional orchestrator, correct? And then once you have chosen, let that regional orchestrator deploy the VNF, correct? That's the part we're talking about, correct? You cannot just...
Well, VNF or a whole,
arbitrary decide your
or choice, a whole I mean, service segment.
Well, let's separate multi-cloud from, I think the fundamental question is, do we think that ONAP itself, that inventorying fabric nodes and fabric topology is part of ONAP's scope? And if the answer is yes for edge clouds, for owner-operated edge clouds, then the question would be, do we want to maintain a separation of concerns within ONAP itself so that the fabric inventory is separate in a separate scheme or whatever from the service provider inventory so that at some level of abstraction, the service provider functionality of ONAP deals with the internal cloud at the same level of abstraction it deals with external clouds. That's the first question.
I guess the way that I would look at it is that all these things are valid use cases that are displayed on the screen, but I just don't think it's sufficient. That I think there are going to be cases where we do want to have a tighter tie with the inventory, and more orchestration at the edge. So, you know, I can see operators doing every one of the three scenarios that's on this picture, but there's at least a fourth one that we haven't talked about yet, and that's where there would be a different connection that doesn't go through multi-cloud.
But there's also something else. We have a set of external APIs being defined northbound, and those external interfaces today do not include the capability to expose infrastructure as a service, or platform as a service, or even resource as a service. They just don't exist.
Yeah.
The only thing that exists today northbound is a service instance ordering interface.
Yeah.
So one thing definitely we would like to close on now is essentially what we are talking about is sort of the long-term target architecture options. This doesn't actually change, the simple starting point of MVP, right? I mean, essentially, the cloud, the edge cloud itself is providing some value of some form to ONAP, right? More of analytics and all those.
Hold on. So
I would say, pause
for a second.
My request is the target architecture can be refined over next few weeks. It takes time. I mean, because there are several use cases. Right? And Chris's point, be expressive of all the use cases, and also, there are two key aspects. Right? One is we should be able to summarize all those in one slide, but also sort of be able to expand on those, in several slides possibly. And we can all work together as a team on that.
So I'm sorry, let me just ask Rampy just one quick question. So I think we need to be clear in our terminology, right? You know, so you said it could be that the edge cloud is providing additional functionality to ONAP. I think what you really meant to say is that the edge cloud could be providing additional functionality to the service provider, and both could be ONAP, or just the service provider. So what is ONAP is a separate question than what is service provider functionality than what is cloud provider functionality, I think. Isn't it? Or
correct.
Or
so at least when you're talking analytics, it could be that the edge cloud provider itself is delivering that to ONAP Central, and we are not even talking any ONAP edge components.
Or the edge cloud provider could be the same provider as the service provider. It could be owner operated cloud, and I'm hearing that it could all. Some people think that it could all be ONAP. That the green edge cloud provider. The provider of the cloud could be the same provider as the service provider, and so they would want their one ONAP instance to manage both the Blue Central and the Edge Green.
Yeah, that is one implementation option.
But
that would mean that we would be building in ONAP. We would be building projects in ONAP that would be managing Fabric, doing analytics on Fabric failures. Topology, ONAP right now up to now has been basically service provider focused. I think it's used multi-cloud to look at clouds pretty much as much as possible as commodities. We're talking about extending the scope of ONAP substantially so that now ONAP knows deeply about a cloud.
Hey guys,
Gil, to be very clear, so let's do one thing. Can I request a team to just let's go through the MVP? Then we can start, that will give you a crisp picture on what we can deliver, then we can actually reflect back. Is that okay?
Okay, so let's give
if you're talking details there, it actually helps clarify even the use cases further.
So let's give Shocker a shot to finish, and then we can go on to the MVP.
Hey, Ramkin, Raghu, I think you both can relate to this discussion because we had similar discussion yesterday, right? But this is critical. I think the point that may be implied, but may not be explicitly mentioned or may not have been mentioned on the call is that the reason that you orchestrate on the edge cloud is because you've defined a service within the service design and creation that requires that a VNF can run on the cloud.
I think that's blue. I think that's the blue edge, not the green edge, Shankar, isn't it?
No, no.
Shankar, I think
the green. I don't want to go green or blue, right? So as part of the orchestration, as part of the recipe, there has to be a step that says orchestrate this function on the edge cloud and inventory it as well.
That was the point.
I think
that was the point Gil was making, Shankar. That's why I think we want to have a common pattern. Whether I deploy VNF on a edge cloud or a data center cloud or a third party cloud, the blue box in the top should have a similar view regardless where that thing, because if I can take the same VNF and deploy it in data center, my own data center one day, edge location second day, on a third party cloud third day. So the behavior of the blue should be pretty much same, because that was a common thing. And by having a separate concern, just like you said, the inventory of fabric, inventory of the servers and everything, that's a green's responsibility, and that green does that. And green says, I am workload agnostic. That means anybody can request a workload to run, whether it's through coming through ONAP for VNFs or coming through some OSS systems or coming through some third-party applications. I'll treat all my customers in the same way.
Exactly. So, Vimal, I'm supporting, I'm actually echoing, I'm supporting your point, right? In the point that I took it one step further, right? I went up to the service level and said, let's say, for example, we're trying to create an SWN between two service providers, and each side has to orchestrate their own virtual CPE. Mm-hmm. And the virtual CPE happens to be orchestrated on the edge cloud, and each service provider has a different edge cloud, right? So I'm making the argument for your point, to support your point, Vimal, that the orchestration of the VNF, whether it is on the data center cloud or the edge cloud, from the ONAP perspective, it should look the same. And exactly. Then when the trigger for the deployment, if you will, on either central or edge is invoked, then you have a driver that says, oh, I'm deploying on the edge, and the edge happens to be green grass or a crane or whatever it is, I know how to do that. Or if I'm deploying it on the data center infrastructure, I know how to do that as well.
Yeah, I think what's missing here is that the blue edge is under the green. So there's a whole suite of functionality up in the blue, where you have a central blue, you have edge blue, that is managing the edge from a service perspective.
I think, Gil, that's not the point. I think that we are mixing two things. That's not what Shankar is saying. Shankar is saying that green, the way Raghu and Ramkes depicted green, keeping it pure that the way it is, makes sense. That's what Shankar is saying, that because you want to keep the separate inventory, separate orchestration.
Right. But I want to address Alex's question. Because Alex, when we said that earlier, Alex said, so then Vimal, all you're asking from your edge provider is resources? And the answer is no, because our edge provider is also got the blue functionality in it as well. So edge, the word EDGE appears also in the blue.
But Gil, so what is the difference between green grass and full-blown AWS deployment?
Okay.
None. I claim that it is none, right? But I mean, if we want to have that discussion, I know that, Chris, we run out of time, and what I want to give Ramki is the time to finish him and Raghu, right? But if we need to take it offline, I think we should dedicate 2 hours to close on this issue. These are all critical points.
I would say, exactly. So I would say this, the target architecture is something we should work on in the next few weeks while we actually, you know, we'll talk about the MVP, and we're getting really crisp that we can close on it. I mean, certain piece where which we can deliver. And let's talk about the MVP now. Let's
and you're having the weekly meetings on Mondays too, right? So for people who are
interested. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
That's where we discussed it yesterday, over 2 hours. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I see something weird happening on my screen. I don't know what's going on there on the right side.
Got a Mac, right?
I see.
Okay, excellent. So now let's go to the... Okay, next topic, MVP. We'll go there, right there. So we'll just quickly talk about it before coming to the sequence diagram. So essentially here, I mean, essentially what we did was, you know, let's start small, right? Especially for Casablanca, right? Where we define option A is just as using current ONAP capabilities with following components to summarize event data to ONAP Central, right? And option A is no ONAP components in the edge itself, nothing. And what we are saying is this is providing critical edge functionality directly by cloud providers and VNF vendors, where essentially the value is through summarizing data in the edge and avoiding WAN bandwidth deluge. I mean, basically, you inform only of significant changes, right, through events and alarms, right? And two categories here, clear separation, infra analytics directly coming from cloud providers and the app analytics coming from, you know, the VNF vendors. And what we're really seeing is in this, if you're looking at closed loop use cases, for example, VNF scale in, scale out, these need only central ONAP intervention. These can take advantage of, you know, especially proactive app infra predictive analytics from cloud or VNF vendors and be even proactive in the scale in out model, right? So that means then for scaling out, there is no need for having anything to do with closed loop. I mean, not even any specific component which is running on the ONAP page. And same goes with the resiliency use case, fault management, where what we are really seeing is that several cloud providers can automatically recover from VM host going responsible through heartbeat mechanism. Same goes for, you know, in the VNF landscape, they can implement health checks and then fail over to the, you know, the HA VNF and then move on, right? So basically, critical closed-loop functionality is completely delivered by the edge cloud providers in conjunction with the VNF vendors. And you don't need, and in this model, what we're saying is there are no ONAP components in the edge at all, nothing. And here, I want to point out that, I mean, this is sort of solving the related use case links. There is a closed-loop use case link from OLTI, right? Presented as part of the ONAP Beijing release developer forum, you know, asking for enhanced alarm correlation, right, where this can deliver direct value. And essentially what they're saying is this concept is beyond 5G. I mean, it can be used for VoLTE or other use cases too. And same goes for 5G optimization of the deployed network slices, where it talks about, you know, edge analytics use case.
Rabu, what you're describing is also applicable for data center. What we are saying is that there are certain automation responsibilities that can be given to the cloud, whether it's data center or edge cloud, to say these are the things that are not very specific to any application. There's that very generic closed loop that can be done by the cloud analytic applications like VM going down or application not responding or something like that. And so that is what you're describing here is equally applicable for data center deployment as well as edge deployment.
Exactly, Amit. Exactly, Amit. Yeah, and then I use it as a simple starting point. Yeah, exactly.
We are not, even though we constantly use the term edge, we are not explicitly distinguishing between
excluding the data center.
Central DC versus an edge DC. It's a cloud domain, if you will. Yeah.
Yep. Just to add on the value, I mean, the edge value is sharper because, for example, if you consider like the ONAP Central in you know, New York and managing locations in San Francisco or Phoenix, then summarizing data is even higher value, right? Correct. And here, so some things to note for Casablanca, what we are thinking is essentially, at least a simple starting point, the analytics and fault management policies in clouds and VNFs are independently configured. And what we're saying is a single pane of glass policy management through a distributed policy framework. I mean, just continuing on the nice presentation from MAM, that is sort of, you know, out of scope for R3. Let's start small, and then we can think about how to integrate with the centralized policy framework to simplify policy management, you know, R4 and beyond.
Hold on, you're talking about option B or option A?
Option A. I'm just. I was talking about these bullets. Yeah, I'll highlight. Yeah, these
option,
are the bullets.
Option A. You're treating the edge cloud totally independent from ONAP. Correct.
I mean, this is just edge cloud providing additional value this is just like today. I mean, basically, Edge Cloud providing additional value, on to Vimal's point, just, you know, solving standard data center problems, but bringing enhanced value to Edge, especially in being able to summarize data, but that's it. There are no Edge ONAP components at all. Nothing.
What is the value to the ONAP provider? What is the value to the ONAP provider here?
So the biggest value is summarizing data at the edge and avoiding bandwidth dilute. So basically to ONAP itself or to the service provider themselves. So basically it is ONAP Central in New York managing edge location San Francisco or Phoenix. Then you want to make sure data is summarized and not data is constantly being fed, right, periodically, unnecessarily. I mean, we want to inform the central ONAP only of significant changes in the edge. That's the critical concept here.
So Parvis, in the first sub-bullet called analytics, there are four sub-bullets. The first value is summarized data, but there's also, you know, closed loop use cases which are offloaded to the cloud provider. So option A gives you all that you want, except most of the stuff is done by the cloud provider as opposed to involvement of the Blue, for example, right? So it's just keep
correct.
It.
Cloud and the VNF vendor also both. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, for example,
I have a question here. Oh, hold on. For MVP, if you are at the service layer, if you have your recipe or template from SPC, when that is submitted to SO, is the SO is aware of all these resources in the edge or no?
And that is the question that Gil has been asking. How detailed of a view will the central Blue need to have? And the question that Gil has been pushing us towards is, or the direction that Gil has been pushing us towards is, keep the gory stuff in the green.
Yep.
And keep it very highly abstracted service component view. And he's typing some additional stuff on the chat window, but you can read it offline later. But as Gil is pushing us towards keep it simple at the top.
There is an SO and AI.
Hey, Parvis, just one second. I'm just trying to get us to think in terms of functional architecture, right? So that green and blue is not a deployment architecture. It's just a functional architecture, right? So it seems to me that there are differences in functionality between a service provider and a cloud provider view. And I'm thinking we should try to maintain that in our ONAP functional architecture, irrespective of whether ONAP provides both the blue and the green, or not. Or at least I'm trying to raise the question, do we want to maintain a separation between the blue and the green? Do we believe that there is such a separation of functionality or not? So I'm sorry, go ahead, Parvis.
Yeah, my point is the discussion we had in the architecture, the Tiger Team discussion. Okay, when the service is invoked, that STC has to do something. STC is going to look into the orchestration of resources in the edge or no. If it's going to look into the edge, then it has to submit two recipes or two, whatever you call it, the template, to the SO. Or SO is totally unaware of all the resources in the edge cloud. Is that the case or not?
So
the second case is what we are saying, or what Raghu and Ramki are saying, that the blue SO should not know how to orchestrate the resource level that the fabric. That's the responsibility of the green. And that's why we separate the concern, which is what Gil and Raghu and Ramki have been saying. So that we keep it, and also Sagar say the same thing. We want.
I think we're all saying the same thing. But the trouble is that if you treat things as a VIM, then we would want to keep the inventory of what's inside the VIM in the AAI naively, right? Because we want to know what resources are available so that placement could be done.
Yeah.
Well, that wouldn't be the case here, right? Because you have a completely separate area of concern and responsibility.
I don't think that's what we are saying, Alex. What we are saying is that whatever green exposes, we will keep that an inventory in blue so that we can make intelligent decision. If the blue and the green happens to be the same company, it might expose more detail. then green happened to be, let's say, about what you saw on the right-hand side, then we might have a little less detail and we might have to interact with
but the it's,
So we can't say we. So I have no idea, Alex, when you say that we need to have something, who we is. Is we ONAP or is we the blue?
I thought.
Well, I'm looking at the edge-to-edge orchestration case. I don't care that it's. I mean, it's fine if it's done from the.
Alex, let's really focus on the MVP here, right? Let's not talk about the generic case. Let's talk about in the context of this MVP. So, this proposal.
For option A, please clarify if the resources are allocated for the edge cloud, is that visible to STC, SO, and the rest of the owner? Yes or no?
What you call as resources, as seen by the blue provider, should be a catalog of compute as a service or networking as a service offered by that domain. It should not. It could have sufficient detail. As an example, if I go to AWS and I'm not doing API, I'm just doing a portal, I can go and say I want an EC2 instance of type large or medium or small, right? And you immediately know what the capabilities are of that compute instance. That is the level of catalog type of information that should be present in STC and in the blue provider for STC to design. Can I use this edge domain to host these edge functions for these behaviors, right? If you have a memory use case, you might want to choose an edge provider that offers, I don't know, hundreds of gigabytes of memory in that compute instance. Versus some other edge provider that does not offer that. So the level of detail should be, in my opinion, the catalog offering of that edge domain.
Just to add to that point, for example, are you thinking, like, for example, when you create a VNF, whether the central ONAP, specifically India, is aware of all the VMs which are being created? Is that your question? As an example, I'm taking an example when you're saying resource awareness.
My question is the following. When you place an order for a service, that service has some SLA terms, whatever that, latency, bandwidth, blah, blah. And STC is going to take that and map it into a recipe, a template, and send that to SO. And SO has to allocate resources based on the available infrastructure resources. It has to go and ask OOF and say, give me the right VM or the right cloud. Correct? How that will help option A?
Okay. So what we consider as a service template and STC at that point is we need to also have the template include the choice of locations, for example, as to what possible domains could be used. So that could be one of the attributes. As an example, if it was an AWS, the region or availability zone could be...
No, that's already there. I think,
Parviz, I know where you're getting at. I think what this would happen is, let's take a specific example, right? Let's say the cloud provider... supports automatic fault management. By that, it can automatically recover from a VMware host going unresponsive. So how that will be exposed is sort of a cloud capability, which is exposed through policy and then exposed through OOF through that. So basically, OOF will choose, hey, this is the capability the cloud can offer and it can capitalize on that and let me use it. That's the way this will be exposed.
But once it is configured,
it's on autopilot. So basically, once the cloud is configured, the capability is nothing. It's all an autopilot. It's all automatically taken care of.
But keep in mind, for MVP, for Casablanca, we already have the multi-cloud support as a zone ID and cloud provider ID. And that is where that is visible, those to a tuple, to the OOP. So for this use case, are you adding a new attribute to that tuple? Are you adding a new thing? It's called location or something else?
In this case, more of capability. So for example, if the cloud can, basically offer resiliency capability, you'll add it as additional capability. This is sort of, you go back to the question I was asking Pam, how extensible the framework is sort of for adding new cloud capabilities, correct? But capability basically, right? Because location is an attribute, then there'll be several new capabilities we could be looking at. This is just one example.
And so what happens with hardware accelerated VNFs that are going to be deployed in the edge? How is that going to get handled?
So even that can capitalize on the cloud capability, right? Why not, Alex? It can, right? I mean, it's basically, if it's using a VM, then if the VM can recover from being going unresponsive, it's totally
usable. Can't we make that consistent? I mean, we already have a way of doing discovery on a Vim and registering the capabilities of the infrastructure.
Yeah, exactly. That's the goal. So exactly. So that's the part, Alex, what in the disclaimer in the start, we haven't worked out the APIs. We first want to talk about the functionality, what we want to deliver, and exactly, that's the goal. We want to get to the APIs and be consistent. Exactly right. Yeah.
So I think it's a very reasonable starting point to bring this in as a VM click into the architecture that we just talked about with the multi-VM team a couple of weeks ago, and then we can expand out from there. This may not be the complete end-to-end architecture, but it makes a decent starting point given the capabilities we already have.
Chris?
Yes.
Chris?
Yeah.
I just want to have one question that I was taking on the chat there a little bit, because it talks about here also edge analytics with the VNFs. And I was trying to see, I think, how that edge analytics is actually get out there, because it wouldn't it be great if we say, okay, this VNF runs on the cloud, therefore we have to deploy the VNF, deploy edge analytics there separately, at least we don't need the one to have the VNF sort of come with, okay, here's my package for the edge and here's my package for the data center, so to say.
Yeah, or is it that we could, let's say it's Microsoft Azure, because we just talked about how that plugs in. If it gets the VNF gets deployed out on Azure or the edge, and then you go to the Azure portal to figure out whether the VNF is up and down. Is that what you were referring to?
Okay, here it says Edge Analytics VNFs, and the motivation was that we didn't want to pump a lot of data back, so we want to do some analytics locally. Makes sense, fair enough. But I think we need to look at ways to make sure that irrespective of whether it's deployed locally or deployed centrally, it's sort of not different requirements coming from the VNF.
Yes.
At least, Stephen, that's what we had in mind. I mean, though we are using Edge as a motivator for this, but I think to Vimal's point, I mean, essentially this is generic. I mean, this concept can be used broadly, right? That is at least how we are thinking. Well, and that's why we're referring back to the VoLTE use case also here.
Ramki, for your option A, the answer to Stephen's question is the following. Since ONAP has no visibility to the resources in the Edge cloud, Stephen, the answer is no. The DCAE function is totally contained within the edge. ONAP is unaware of it.
Yeah, but okay, look at it from the VNF provider perspective then. What does that mean? What does that translate to, Pavis, what you just said?
Okay, if the VNF is a part of the infrastructure, the cloud provider, the edge, is going to take care of that. All the functions.
Okay, but if we take that approach, we're back to the first discussion. This is not a Vim interface.
Exactly.
So option A. Yeah, this is true. This is an option A.
But option A, I thought from the summary from Chris, is this looks like a Vim, more or less.
Yep.
Well, this is definitely this is a Vim interface enhancement, as simple as that, right?
Sure, and that's reasonable approach, but then... what you said is not necessarily true. That means that ONAP somehow is requesting to deploy that VNF at the edge, because we wanted to decide us on the edge, or we wanted to decide centrally. And maybe when we do that, we're also looking, okay, we need to deploy some other things, for example, the edge app analytics there.
See, I wouldn't think it'd be the VNF vendor who would decide. I would think it'd be the service provider. So if I've got an app that can manage a self-driving car, or if I got a VNF that can manage a self-driving car, right? It's up to the service provider. I mean, that's an extreme example because it's liability, right? But it's up to the service provider, you know, whether to deploy that in an edge or a core. Of course, you're going to deploy that on the edge. And it'd be the service provider who the VNF vendor would say, hey, look, you know, to deploy my app for a self-driving car, you've got to have like less than 4 microseconds of latency or whatever. You need to have this much, you know, CPU. And the service provider would decide, okay, well, given that, I want my edge own app instance to manage this VNF. Because I can tolerate no latency in my control loops. I want to be able to restart this thing whenever I want.
Well,
I get that, except this is no VNF edge components.
But Stephen, what we are saying is what we get from infrastructure, some of the automation we want to push to the infrastructure to say, if the VM goes down or something happens, these are the things that you can do automatically. We want to push that responsibility to the cloud layer. And that is true whether it's at the edge location or a data center location. So we are not doing anything different for the edge than what we would do at the data center. It's the same response,
okay,
that we can push certain activity or certain function to the cloud layer.
Okay, Ramki, to really close this discussion, I would suggest that we use a very simple use case, very simple with the workflow and the interaction between the edge cloud and the owner. We need to
show that.
Okay.
This is exactly what we did. This is the sequence diagram.
Could you present this? Do we have time, Chris? Could we go through this?
Yeah,
we're very close to the end. We've got about 7 minutes.
Okay.
Let's talk about this. I mean, this really summarizes what all we talked about, all the bullet points, right? So even before that, just want to make a quick mention on option B. What we're saying is it's adding to option A, plus also we are thinking some independent DCA enhancement. What we're saying is, hey, these are not really closed loop components, but perhaps new microservice based apps like centralized SON applications or optimization for SON drive test minimization. But these are all completely independent. That's the context. And with that, let's quickly go here. That will become more evident. So in the workflow, let's just talk about, so this part, right? Essentially, it could be OM essentially playing a role in deploying the right ONAP edge components. Like what you're saying is, you know, let's say we're going with option B, then you're packaging certain DCA components and then deploying them on the edge, right? Correct. Right. That's the first step. Correct. Correct. And now, essentially, then also critically, one thing to keep in mind, only the red text. I mean, right now we're thinking about as Casablanca release proposed items, correct? And then the blue is option B, and then the other color. I would say, what is the right way to orange? The right orange is option A, right? Correct. So once your OOM has deployed the ONAP edge components, right? So then it's business as usual, right? I mean, your ONAP central deploys, for example, the standard workflow as today, right? Correct. Deploy the applications, right to the edge infrastructure. No ONAP edge involvement at all, right? Because there is no deployment workflow ONAP edge involvement, right? Business as usual, everything is deployed, part of the workflow, right? So then essentially what happens is, critically, essentially with ONAP edge, so let's say we are running some DCAE apps here. What the DCAE app here could do is essentially talk to the edge infrastructure and then, you know, essentially get telemetry data from the infrastructure, and then operate on it, right? Subscribe topics and telemetry stream. But there is no closed loop here, right? I mean, basically, because that is not part of the red text, right? I mean, there is a closed loop happening, but, that is not part of ONAP, right? To be very clear. Right? And last but not least is the topic we talked in depth around, you know, how you summarize analytics. So basically what happens is the ONAP central talks to the edge cloud provider, right? Not edge ONAP, edge cloud provider, asks for basically you know, subscribes for topics of interest, right? So for example, it could be around analytics summary. An example analytics policy could be, you know, if host and VM threshold for memory and CPU exceed certain value, then notify me, right? And also an even further advanced would be the thresholds themselves are auto-detected by the edge cloud provider, right, automatically. So now, essentially, then you get that summarized analytics stream. Then the second part is also the, what you're also saying is telemetry data is still available, and that could also be sent to the ONAP central, you know, if desired, as desired, at whatever frequency you want.
Ramke, the key, the major disconnect here is you're not showing it. The service request goes to ONAP central, correct?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The service template, what is in the service template that SDC generates and sends it to SO that has to do with the edge cloud? What is in it?
Yeah, so as you see, Parviz, we have put it in the gray box, and we are. And if you see the text to the right of the gray box, we are not going to worry about that. We are going to assume that the infrastructure is ready for us to do either the blue window or the ugly pink window or orange window, whatever that color is, option A or option B. And so, but. If in the future release, if we were to go down that path of opening up this gray box and automating this infrastructure as a service request, then we would have a good answer for your question on what does that service request look like and what is the service template that is created by ONAP Central, what does it need in SDC, what are the catalog items needed, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All the gory details will be worked out. And
this is a part of MVP for Casablanca or no?
No. It's not.
Then this doesn't bring any value in my mind.
So Parviz, I know your question. So what you're saying is, let's say we talked about in depth about the capabilities, right? So yeah. All you're looking for is how they're going to be exposed, correct? Right?
Yeah.
So that's the part we talked. We have to capture that. So disclaimer, yeah. Right? When we started this, we identified the MVP, but we haven't worked out all the details, right? I mean, how the capabilities are going to be exposed.
Yeah, that's Raghu, my main point is the following, Raghu. If there is, let's say, a latency requirement, a bounded latency, like let's say 50 milliseconds, apparently the edge cloud has to participate in delivering that latency, end-to-end latency. How would you capture that in your service recipe that goes from SDC to SO? And then SO has to send an inquiry to OOF and say, help me with locating the right edge for this latency that I need for the service.
Correct. Yeah, all good questions, and I have answers, and we'll discuss it offline, and then we'll come back to the team here.
Yeah, so that's the part we are still working out the precise details, and we'll, of course, the first thing we'll do is the Vim capabilities itself. We'll complete. I think we are getting more concrete there. We'll complete on those details, what those capabilities mean and which components will be affected, right?
Chris.
Great, yes. I was speaking on mute. Great, thank you. We are out of time. This was a good conversation. Michael, I'm sorry we didn't get to the Pomba today, but we can put that on early next call.
Thanks, Chris. Good.
Yeah. And appreciate the discussion. Let's keep going with this. Next call, we have a couple of other use case people who are coming through. We also have a few new project proposals, and then also to start pulling this architecture together into concrete recommendations going into the Beijing meeting. So thank you all for the conversation. I think this was good. And we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.